Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
What's going to happen tomorrow? Where am I going? What's life about? And there's only one thing that you need to know. Pizza will always be there for you.
Good morning, Sweet World, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Thursday, October 1st. We're in October. I'm J.E. Skeets, and joining us live, as always, Tass Mellis.
Thankfully, despite it being a whole new game, basketball still the shortest of the four major sports.
We've also got the bearded one, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-yo!
The international man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friend.
And last but not least, making the magic happen, JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to everyone joining us live right now on YouTube. Thanks to everyone who has already hit up nodunks.com to buy your new Turn Up Love You Guys awesome t-shirt and or a classic No Dunks pin or the other shirts we have in our store. Keep your questions and your comments coming for our next Beach Steppin' podcast. Hit the beach yesterday to answer a few of your cues. Got crazy in that one. I mean, these beach stepping podcasts get more and more insane. We talked for about 10 minutes about killing cockroaches, I think. So go listen to that and email in your questions, nodunks@theathletic.com, or tweet them in at nodunksinc. We got the up-down report on today's show, but of course, we're starting with game one of the NBA Finals. Looking back at that, breaking it all down, AD, LeBron, and the Lakers task. They roll in game one. They topped the Heat 116-98. Here's a classic Skeets line. It wasn't even that close, wasn't it? Yeah. But what do you think? Big takeaway from the game one victory for LA.
Anthony Davis at center would have made this even worse, I think. That's how bad it was. It could have gotten worse. The Heat actually really liked that Dwight Howard starting at center. They were feeling it. They were up 13 midway through the first, but then this thing changed when Anthony Davis went to the five. Dwight Howard went to the bench, and LeBron coincidentally went to the bench too. And Anthony Davis was just getting whatever the heck he wanted absolutely everywhere on the floor. And it just started rolling from there. I think the score definitely makes it seem a little bit closer, but it just seems like everything was going wrong for the Miami Heat. I think Anthony Davis is clearly the biggest problem, and the Miami Heat, they just can't treat this like the Boston Celtics, where they switch everybody and they say, you know, this one guy's not going to dominate this matchup. These are two superstars, AD and LeBron, that have to have special codes, and I think Bam Adebayo is the only guy on the Miami Heat that has any hope of Anthony Davis being slowed down by him. There's nobody else to do it. So I think the switching was too easy for the Miami Heat. You got to keep Bam on AD at all times. And there's some numbers. I think, you know, I won't bog us down with numbers, but later on, there's some positivity to be taken from this for the Miami Heat. You got to keep it positive here with Bam, but you switch less easily. Bam's got to be on him, and the same with LeBron James. There just has to be a code. I think Eric Spoelstra going into game two, you got to treat it way differently, the Celtics, and say, hey, Duncan Robinson, Goran Dragic, Tyler Herro, there's no way you guys can switch on to LeBron James. It's way too freaking easy, because then the doubles are coming, and then the threes start raining down. And that was one thing I was making notes because I thought the threes would drop off for the Lakers. They started 7 of 12. Okay, I'm going to keep that note because there's no way they're going to keep on going that high or that shooting that well from the three-point line. But then they finished the first half of 11 of 17. Cool. And to me, I don't know what you guys think, but I think the Lakers, they just want you to double LeBron. They want you to double AD, and that gives their role players confidence. I personally think you got to go single coverage on LeBron, even though he's going to dominate everybody. And that's going to put some pressure on Bam because he has to be on the floor for them to win. But you guys tell me, you think they should single or double LeBron? Is there any hope? I think that would actually give them a little bit of semblance to slow down those three-point shots that were just raining down, because the superstars are going to be the superstars. They're going to get theirs. But if you add the threes, they're done.
Yeah, I mean, if the Lakers hit this many threes, they're not going to lose a game. We talked about it, they had to hit 30% of their threes, and they always win in the bubble, let alone hitting nearly 40%. And that cooled off as the game went on, and we got into garbage time. They were one of the worst teams at shooting the three-pointer in this entire bubble run. I think they were the 21st out of the 22 teams down there in terms of three-point efficiency. They only made like 34% in Disney. And they're on fire, like you said last night, Tass. Everybody. Like Danny Green, KCP, Caruso. I mean, AD hit a big one there. LeBron hit a bomb. You know, everybody catching fire from distance, and the Heat will have no chance. But I think it is still the game plan. If I'm trying to slow the Heat, or slow the Lakers, excuse me, if I'm the Heat, I take my chances in game two again to see if they can replicate it, honestly, and try and pack the paint as much as possible. But it can't be both. It can't be
exactly.
It can't be guys killing you inside and then giving up all these uncontested three-point looks. Pick one or the other. I would pick trying to keep them, limited in the paint and their production down there, and let them shoot away and see if they come back to the mean a little bit more, and maybe you got a bit more of a game. That's my opinion. I don't know what you think, Trey.
I think you're exactly right. You can't give up 15 threes and also let Anthony Davis dominate inside. So, like Tass is saying, the switches were too easy, but really, what is the solution for Davis? And how are the Heat going to possibly do anything to slow him down? Because even Bam, it's a little bit like the scene where they're brainstorming ideas in I Think You Should Leave. Bam, too small. Kelly Olynyk, stinky. Myers Leonard loves his mother-in-law. There's nobody you can throw out there to really guard Davis. He just looked like a different species of player out there. I mean, Bam is a huge guy, and Davis is towering over him and wider than him and thicker than him and maybe even faster than him. It was an impressive performance by Davis, but in the first half, the Lakers shot 6 of 9. Very nice. From three, off passes from LeBron and Davis. So it's like you double-team those guys, they kick it out, and the role players were hitting three last night. I still think you got to do whatever you can to take away inside just because you got to hope that the Lakers get cold like they have before in the bubble. But I don't know. It was a perfect storm for the Lakers last night. They looked like the better team. They looked dominant, and it felt like this game was over 2 seconds into the third quarter after the Lakers really blew it open. And then suddenly this game took forever to start, and we were just waiting for it to end at the end. This was a blowout. How is it going to be better for the Heat? They got to figure something out. There's no way you can guard Anthony Davis with Andre Iguodala or Solomon Hill. Like, it's not going to happen. That was the problem.
Lee, could things have honestly gone any worse for the Miami Heat in game one of the NBA Finals? Because not only do they get punked, not only does AD kill them, LeBron does LeBron things, the Lakers role players can't miss threes. But then we have Dragic, of course, leaving this game. We don't even know if he's going to play in this series. Let's be honest. He's got the plantar tear in his left foot. Woj says he's able to put pressure on it. Hasn't ruled out that he'll come back. Even if he comes back, you can't imagine the kid's going to be 100%, so that's tough. Bam leaves in the third quarter. He aggravates his left shoulder. Jimmy Butler rolls his left ankle in the second quarter. He remained in the game. I was actually shocked when it was a bit of a blowout that he continued to play. They're three best players.
Turned it again later, too, Butler did.
Yes, right. So, again, I ask you, could it have gone worse?
No, and I guess that's a good thing for Miami in the sense that it can't be that bad in game two. But the real concern is Goran Dragic, because if you saw when he did actually have that injury happen to him, he looked behind him like a lot of guys do when they sort of blow their Achilles. They sort of look behind as if they got hit, and he sort of glanced behind and didn't see anyone there. So hopefully he can get back. I mean, I think the Heat are obviously going to do everything they can to get him back, but he probably will be not 100% if he does play at all here. So that's a huge loss for them, because Tyler Hero, he started off okay when he came out last night, but then he got overwhelmed in that second half. and Duncan Robinson and those guys, they just can't really fill in those minutes and that experience that Goran Dragic gives them. So that's a big, big blow there for Miami. And yeah, I mean, because the Heat started this game actually really well, on fire. Everyone was hitting shots. They were up big 13 points in that first quarter. And then all of a sudden, the Lakers took the lead at the end of the first quarter. So they got rid of that deficit pretty quickly. But it is the three-point shooting for me, which is really, really tough for the Heat, because you mentioned it there, Skis, that Lakers hadn't been shooting it well, but then everyone was knocking them in last night. So then what do the Heat do? They go out, and then Anthony Davis was just unstoppable inside. And you saw when Bam was out, and they went with Derek Jones, and they went with Kelly Olynyk, and it was just like, you may as well throw Haslam out there at this point. You know, I mean, like, it really is, because they just, those guys, like Derek Jones Jr., I mean, he's a long, lanky guy, but he's got nowhere near the physicality to stay with Anthony Davis. Olynyk a little bit more physically, but athletically, he just can't get close. Davis wasn't challenged at all last night. And LeBron, I mean, Davis is getting all the credit this morning, and fair enough, but LeBron, I thought last night, just controlled that game. And he was the one, the pace setter, who was like, all right, guys, after this, after their hot start, you know, I'm going to control this game. I'm going to get you guys the ball. You're going to hit shots. And then we're just going to go on and demolish the Heat here. And you can see LeBron, those losses in the finals before and the experience he has, he was not taking his foot off the gas at any point last night. Even when they're up 25, 30 points, he was still pushing that ball as hard as he could, because he knows what can happen in the finals. Things can turn quickly and injuries can change series. He's been in that situation where he's had to carry teams and it's tough, but he also knows you cannot give your opponent any sort of life or any sort of hope. And I think that's what he did in that second half there. Jimmy Butler started on LeBron, which was a little bit of a surprise, and I think he probably is their best matchup, but you just wonder if he can keep that up and how much of a toll that will take on him on the offensive end if he has to do that the entire game. So lots of questions here for the Heat, lots of bad things happen in that game, but it is only one game. It's just one game, but it feels like a lot.
Yeah, but hold on.
Game.
If Dragic isn't playing in the rest of the series, Tass, if Bam is at, you know, 75%, even Jimmy, for crying out loud, you know, an ankle is one of those things, like, you can sort of play through it at the time, but then you have a day or two and it swells up or it's more painful, stuff like that. That guy's a fighter, so I assume he plays in game two, but let's just focus on Dragic even, Tass. If there's no Dragic, the Heat have no chance of winning this series. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think there's about 1% chance that they have of winning this series. Jimmy Butler would have to be phenomenal. I think Andre Iguodala would be the guy that they start instead of Goran Dragic, because they just can't rely on Tyler Hero plus Duncan Robinson out there at all times for defensive purposes. They're going to find him. They're going to find one of those guys anyways. LeBron will, and he's going to destroy one of those guys. I think Iguodala would be out there. And then there's a lot on Jimmy's shoulders to create, because then we're talking Jimmy, Dre, and Jay Crowder on the perimeter for the Miami Heat. So, yeah, it's something that, yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too much of a Debbie Downer here after game one, but it's ginormous to have your leading scorer be out of a series. It's just, it's huge. They relied on him a lot, and it was great watching Jimmy Butler those first 6 minutes. He was phenomenal on the offensive end. This looked like a different Jimmy Butler than the first three rounds. If you watched him in the first three rounds, he didn't want to take over offensively, but LeBron James was guarding Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler was giving it to him. Even when he didn't score, he was going right by him. I think LeBron was, that was his feel out 6 minutes there. But I don't think the Lakers want to have LeBron guard Jimmy. They'd rather be able to put him on Jay Crowder. But with the way they play two bigs, somebody else has got to guard Jay Crowder, because it's they have Anthony Davis out there and they have Dwight Howard out there. There's nobody else for LeBron to guard. So Jimmy was giving it to him. And if Jimmy's out there doing that, then there's a little bit of hope. There's definitely not a lot. Bam Adebayo is even a bigger key to me, though. He just has to be on the floor. And I think a positive you can take is from the first half, they got destroyed when Bam was sitting. This was a half where they lost by 17 points, but somehow when Bam was out there, they won by 3 points. Right. And so you look at that half and you say, whoa, they got slapped around. When he was on the bench, they got slapped around by 20 points. How the heck did they win his minutes when he was out there? But that's how important he is. He is the biggest body, even though he's shorter than Anthony Davis, even though he's not as wide. It's the only guy who can slow them down. So it's again, a lot on his shoulders, because I think you just got to find a way to keep him on him. No switching. It's got to be Bam on Anthony Davis. And the pressure is on him, now aren't you going to get in foul trouble? It's very likely. The reason why he went to the bench was because LeBron got a superstar call going into Bam towards the end of the first quarter there and drew his second foul. But Bam just has to be smarter. He's got so much on his shoulders because the best two players on this Lakers team are huge. And besides Bam, they're not that big. So there's just a lot on him.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, though, for the Heat, because like you're saying, Tass, I agree. Bam's got to be on Anthony Davis for the majority of the game, and Jimmy's got to be on LeBron for the majority of the game. The Heat likes to play a switching style. How are you going to keep Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero out there? How are you going to completely remake your defense when you've been playing a switching and zone style for the entirety of the season, and now you're going to go play in straight up one-on-one man like it's 2010 all over again? That's a tough thing to figure out in the finals, but I kind of agree. They got to do it. Can Jay Crowder keep Dwight Howard off the boards? Is that an X factor in this series going forward? I don't really think so. It's more like the Lakers have two X factors. How do you stop LeBron? How do you stop Anthony Davis? We'll see if they figure out a way, but not promising in game one, that's for sure.
No, and like especially I would say the only real good minutes that happened in game one, or like the little stretch like you guys were talking about, yeah, a lot of the Heat guys were just hitting shots early on, but it was the Heat, they were targeting Dwight in like ball screen and handoff action, and it was a lot of Dragic and Bam pick and roll, and they were that's where all this stuff, all these looks were coming from, and now these are the two guys that are, you know, possibly out. I mean, who knows with Bam? I mean, I hope he plays in game two, but Dragic, I think it's a strong possibility that he doesn't. He's also a free agent. Like, he still has his career a little bit ahead of him here, so who knows if he gets a shot in the foot and you can sort of suck it up, but this sucks. I mean, it's a honestly pretty deflating game one. I you hate to do the overreaction. I know we even have a game. It's just one game. But if there is no Dragic, there is just no way, I think. No way that the Heat win this series. He's that important. If you actually step back and think about it, Jimmy's incredible. We talk Jimmy all the time. Him and his big face coffee. And he was great. You're right, Tass. But this would be, if there's no Dragic and Bam is like obviously diminished, that's like taking basically LeBron and AD off the Lakers, because it's a leading scorer in AD, and it's like the heart and soul of the team, the guy that does everything, Bam playing the LeBron role. Or, you know, that's asking any team. You're taking your two best players away. Again, Jimmy's in the mix there, of course. He's the closer and all that, I get that, but there's not a chance in the world that they win this series if Dragic doesn't play, in my opinion.
No, I agree. They just don't have the depth to be able to cover him. He's so important. He's been so good for them in the bubble.
And Lee, let me ask you, because Tass says he starts Iguodala if there is no Dragic. Do you do that, or do you go to Kendrick Nunn, who, of course, started all season long and had some success in the second half of garbage time last night? Like, what would you do?
Well, I like Iguodala coming off the bench. I think that's a better role for him. But then again, he can be a bit of a distributor on the offensive end, and he's a veteran. He's been there. So maybe he is a better option in this scenario, because otherwise it's Tyler Hero. And again, Hero was okay, I thought, but then he kind of got overwhelmed in the second half and they can just go at him.
You know, LeBron was literally picking him apart.
But the first couple of possessions, Hero didn't do bad defensively on him. The first
We got to throw out the first quarter, period. Like, people are talking up this Miami Heat 23-10 run. Have you never watched a basketball game before? Yeah. Teams go on runs at the beginning of a game.
True.
Yeah, but, so that's the thing. Offensively, Hero's much better for them because he can at least hit some shots. And Iguodala, I just don't, you know, we saw him do it in game six against the Celtics. But yeah, for Eric Spoelstra, he's going to have to play Hero at some point, and he's has to play Iguodala at some point. So you want to start with a veteran. I think you probably do in this scenario. I don't know. It's a tough one because they both have their weaknesses. But yeah, the thing is, it's more just the sort of, it's just deflating for the series knowing that Dragic is probably out, because you just want to see both teams at full strength, and then you're going to get a fairer idea of what the Heat can do against Miami, because this second half, it was well and truly over at the start of the second half. There was no realistic hope that the Heat were going to come back into this game. Like I said, LeBron, he doesn't care, obviously, about the opposition. He's been on the other end of this where he's had players injured. He knows a championship is all that counts at the end of the day, and so he's not like, oh, well, you know what, we'll go easy on these guys. He wants to crush them in four games if he can.
Are you saying LeBron is not going to be a Bart Taylor in the hell track race of Rad and
no,
stop the bike
he's
and wait
absolutely
for
Crew? No. He wants, if he sweeps this, he'll be more than happy. He won't care what the other team has on can put on the floor. So, but that's fine. That's the way it goes too. That's the way it happens in the NBA and in any sport. You play whoever your opponent can put out on the floor. But again, even if they were at full strength, I think the Lakers win that game last night because everything was looking so good. Defensively, I think they really locked in as well after that, a sudden burst there from the Heat. So, you know, they were ready to go. They were ready to go, and they deserved that victory last night.
Yeah, here's good news for the Heat fans. They fell to 1-5 in game one of title series, but all three of their championships came after they dropped game one. So right. Maybe that's good news. Though, this is a weird spot for LeBron, because he usually drops game one of the NBA Finals. I think he was 1-8 coming into this one. So now he's 2-8 in game ones of the NBA Finals. He's usually behind.
So feel out game from the Heat. Unfortunately, right. They don't have LeBron on their team to fall back on to pull off the LeBron sweep. LeBron's game was hilarious to me last night. He did control the game. He had a solid game. He almost ended up with a triple-double. He was stat padding so hard in the fourth quarter, saying, oh man, Anthony Davis is taking home this finals MVP. This guy is dominating out there. He looks like the best player. I better start trying to do something better. He was whipping passes to the corner. Danny Green had a wide open three. He missed. LeBron's all mad. Come on, man. Give me that assist. He obviously ended up one assist shy of a triple-double. LeBron, he's always aware, man. He always knows the narrative. And yeah, LeBron, the numbers looked fine. I didn't feel like he totally put his stamp on the game. He can still be better too, but it was just hilarious watching LeBron realize, you know, he had a nice game going into the fourth quarter. He had something like, I don't know, 17 points, 12 rebounds, and 7 assists, you know. Great game, great number for anybody that's not LeBron. So he said, I better add a couple of points here. And then you look at all the recaps in the morning, and suddenly LeBron's name is higher than Anthony Davis. Oh, look at LeBron showing up. Not a coincidence. Well done by LeBron. He knows. He knows. He knows the game is over. We're up by 30. For some reason, he's still playing late until the fourth quarter. Are you kidding me? Come on, buddy.
Sneaky, sneaky action there. I'm with you on that, Trey. I noticed that as well. He's like, hey, what's going on? He's going to have a word, I'll tell you that, with Markieff Morris, if you saw what he said after the game. Because he said, you know, I know we've got LeBron, but I think AD might be the best player in the world. LeBron is pulling Markieff Morris aside to have a word after that comment with the finals MVP on the line, Taz. That is definitely happening.
Well, Bron made that pass to Danny Green in the corner when this game was well over, and Danny Green missed that shot, and LeBron was pissed because he wanted that triple-double. When Danny Green missed that shot, he was very angry that he didn't get his 10th assist. Yeah, he's well aware that Anthony Davis is the most important player in this series because of who they're playing, because of the size advantage that they have on the front line. AD is, he's going to be the most important player. I think the shorter this series goes, the more AD's importance is highlighted, the more likely he's going to have a finals MVP, the more likely it's sort of like a
saying LeBron's going to throw some game chairs? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, that would help him. It would definitely help him. This would be like a Tony Parker 2007 situation. The shorter it is, the guy who you know, who kind of peaks real early, he's going to be the story. But Bron tried to jam his way in there for sure. He's well aware how this finals MVP things go. But he's the timing master. In March, when he started to turn it on, right before the pandemic hit, he knew he had to write his own story to be the MVP. Game 5 there in the Western Conference Final, that's when he had his best game. He doesn't want to go hard every single possession of every single game, but he just knows how to write the narrative. He loves the narrative. He is the narrative. That's him.
I can't wait to see him finish second in finals MVP voting to go with his second in NBA regular season voting as well. Like, because there's only, I think, about, I think it may be 7 people who vote. So imagine he gets like only 2 out of the 7 first place MVP finals votes. Oh, 2 out of 7, huh? Fine.
Okay. Let's pretend. 10 Dragic plays, Bam plays, Jimmy plays in game 2 on Friday night. What adjustments can Spoelstra do, Trey? Like, will we see more zone? Because we didn't see a lot of zone. I mean, we're talking about packing the paint. Obviously, like, maybe you still give up the 3-pointers to the Lakers and see if they miss some on game 2. Like, what's the move? I mean, if there is one.
Try everything. And I think we're going to see less switching. You know, I think that we will see a little bit less switching to start. But the problem was when they went to zone, it was Anthony Davis, and he was going up against the guy in the middle of the zone, was like Jay Crowder. Like, what is that possibly, how's that possibly going to work? Yeah, maybe they try zone a little bit more when Bam's able to stay on the floor, if he's able to play. I assume he will play in game 2, but they're going to have to try a little bit of zone. You know, they've tried like maybe 4 possessions of zone, not very much. They got a bad shot out of Davis at one point. It was like an 18-footer from the wing where just kind of like, okay, I guess I'll shoot it here. Maybe they can confuse him a little bit more. And if the Lakers aren't hot from three, then the zone always is going to look a little bit better. So I think we'll see a little bit more of that and a little bit less switching, which are, you know, maybe not the go-to defenses for Miami, but they got to try something because Davis is just such a matchup problem. And then you even see it with LeBron, too, when he's getting inside and rebounding, and he looks like the biggest guy on the court sometimes still. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, pack the paint and hope Kuzma and Rondo and Caruso brick it up.
I will say, Kuzma impressed me last night, and I know he's like he would be like sixth or seventh on the Lakers' performances from Game One. I'm sure because you know I don't even have my box score in front of me, but like I'm sure he didn't light it up. But there were two plays in particular that I was like, "Damn, Kuz, okay, that's what they're looking for from you." Late in the first quarter, about 4 minutes to go, they doubled AD on the block. Right, he moved it to Kuzma up top. Kuzma could have shot a three, there's no doubt. I mean, he had enough room. Instead, he drove into the paint, as we always talk about, you know, there's seams there against the Heat, and he kicked to KCP for a corner three. Like, nice, quick move, great pass on the money, and KCP knocked that one down. That's when sort of that little comeback was starting there.
Yeah.
And then near the end of the second quarter, Kuzma had another little drive into the paint, sort of dropped like a little Euro-like step there, and he dimed it up to AD, cut, you know, like right around the dunker spot there. Kuzma's doing those little things, and they got contributions from everyone, don't get me wrong, but I was impressed with a couple Kuzma plays. You know, again, didn't light up the box score by any means, but things like that, you were taking things where he would maybe shoot those normally, a fine look, an okay look, but he's getting the better looks because he's actually putting the ball on the ground a little bit and driving into the teeth of the defense. He impressed me, as did a lot of those guys, though, like Tass. I mean, I know KCP was your sort of guy to watch, X-Factor, and he was fantastic for them, yeah. And Caruso did his thing, Green did his thing. I mean, all these guys for the most part.
Horton Tucker was cheering so well off the bench. Quinn Cook was great in his garbage time. I mean, they were perfect last night.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing for me is that you go single coverage on the big guys to try and take away the confidence that LeBron instills in all these role players. It trickles down, and so I think that's a big switch that you got to make. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, that's a lot of syllables to say. And so that's why Frank Vogel calls him Kenny. I was surprised. I was shocked. You know, AD with Rachel Nichols after the game said, Kentavious saved our game with a couple big threes. He kind of turned around the first quarter.
He did.
He helped. Wow. He helped. Yeah. I mean, they're going to win without
the game. I mean,
yeah. It was a little much. A little much from him.
But back-to-back threes there when they were, you know, down a decent amount. Like Trey said, it's an NBA game. You get down like that all the time. But he started the role there.
Yeah, Kenny started it. How about Kenny? Yeah. Isn't that shocking that he called him Kenny?
Yeah,
Kentavious is a lot of syllables. I know you like counting syllables, Lee. How many syllables are there in Kentavious?
Ooh, Kentavious.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I thought you would have gone with that. I thought you would have gone with Kentavious. That'll do.
He has been good for them at times in the playoffs, you know, because defensively they need him. And he's the sort of guy who has been someone who Lakers fans have just despised over the years because he's an awful shooter and he gets lost on defense, but he definitely has grown into that role and become important for them. So, yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, those threes, like Kuzma only hit that one shot, Phil. It was a tough three in the corner, but he was doing other things. I agree with what you're saying there. He grabbed eight rebounds, you know. And he was trying to
thanks for calling me Phil too. Let's get formal. I love it.
He was trying to find KC Phil. He was trying to find a better shot. But you know, again, the Lakers were just they definitely looked like they were in sync last night, where it was like everyone came out, knew exactly what they were supposed to do. Keep that ball moving, keep finding a better shot if you can. But everything looks so much better when everybody is contributing and knocking down threes. I think everybody who played, maybe not Dwight, of course, but everyone else hit a three-pointer, I think, for the Lakers. So that just shows you sort of just how good the distribution was that, you know, LeBron and AD, of course, took the most shots, but these other guys were just chipping in. And those are just backbreakers for the Heat because it's kind of like if AD and LeBron combine for, say, 70 points, it's like, okay, will they get another 30 points out of these guys? Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Maybe that's something the Heat have to focus on, you know. But you never want to have an approach, let these two guys go off. Sometimes you like let one guy go for 35 or 40, but not two guys. The Heat, I mean, yeah, it's like I say, this one was just one game, but it just feels more than that. It feels worse, especially if these injuries are as bad as as they might be. I mean, Bam sounds like he's maybe okay, but Dragic, I don't know if we'll see him at all.
Hey, and let's be honest, even if all these three of these guys play, I mean, these are the type of injuries that are very easily re-aggravated within the game. I mean, you know, of course, you know, the feet and ankles and shoulders and stuff. I mean, all the jostling that's going on, like. I would actually bet on all three of them trying to go in game two, and but that's not to say that one or two of them unfortunately doesn't have to leave because of the physical play. And we're talking about like the Heat trying to figure out how to slow the Lakers, and no doubt that's a storyline. And what do? You just give up the threes? Do you try and take away AD? Do you double them? Do you not? What do you do with LeBron? But then on the other end too, I was not all that impressed. Again, outside of those like early minutes with some Dragic and Bam pick and roll action when Dwight was involved, I didn't see a whole lot where I was like, oh, the Heat are going to have some success here scoring on this unbelievable Lakers defense, because that's the whole other part. I'm just like not even sure they're going to be able to score enough, even if they can slow down LA offensively. I don't know if you guys agree with that or not.
Well, yeah, the Lakers can make an adjustment too. They can take Dwight off the floor,
right,
and they can go Anthony Davis at the five, and that's when they start running and they can start jamming it down the Heat's throat. And LeBron also benefits from that big time because he can guard Jay Crowder if they size up, and it's not really a problem with this Heat team. So there's I think it's crazy to think that a team that blows out the other can make an adjustment, but at some point I think you just unleash AD for a couple of games just to have some fun here, because it just seems like they're having fun on the Lakers side. I agree, the Heat have so many adjustments to make, and the Lakers can play better too. LeBron can play better too. So it's scary, very scary.
Yeah, but Tass too, LeBron is going to tell Vogel, no, you got to keep starting Dwight. We can't start with AD at the five because he's thinking big picture. He needs the finals MVP. Mm-hmm. You know, AD has 40 easily if he starts that game probably at the five.
LeBron looked bad guarding Jimmy Butler the first 6 minutes. I know it's just the first 6 minutes, but he was giving it to him, and if they play Dwight at the five, he can't guard anybody.
Yeah, no.
Like you are you going to put him on Duncan Robinson? He's going to probably make him look bad to hustle around screens. And you can put him on Jay Crowder, but then Anthony Davis is kind of SOL. Putting him on Jimmy Butler, they're weird matchups. So I think Braun may prefer to get Dwight off the floor because it's wide open space and LeBron can just truck it to the rim.
What did everybody think of the Crowder-LeBron moment there where, they had fallen to the ground, there was some jockeying for the ball, maybe some extra physical play from Crowder, and then back on the other end, Crowder did the classic after the whistle's blown, sort of like, give me the ball type of move, and I always loved that. One of my favorite things in the NBA.
AD just standing there in between, looking at both of them. That was very funny. Looked like Lee Ellis, arms straight down.
But LeBron super pumped, like with AD sort of coming to his defense. Yeah, like the slapping on the chest, or like, I don't know, what was LeBron saying? Like, we're in their head, you know? I don't know what that was all about, except maybe just getting AD fired up even more. But what'd you think, Lee?
Well, Crowder definitely tried to pin him on that sort of loose ball scramble there. And, like, for a second there, LeBron seemed to sort of pinch at his shoulder, grab at his shoulder. And remember when Kelly Olynyk did that to Kevin Love and it popped it out? I mean, that you don't want to see anything like that happen, of course. But Crowder's a big, strong guy. And, look, they used to be teammates. And I actually thought Crowder would be a good LeBron teammate. You know, he's sort of tough guy. He's out there. He can play the sort of role that he needs on a LeBron team. But I think there was a little bit of friction there between them last night. I'm not really sure.
Definitely.
I'm not sure sort of where that came from, other than just it's the finals and they're both teams are trying to win and they're competitive. But Crowder, he's the sort of guy who's not going to back away. I mean, why would he? You know, he's going to stand his ground there. But just don't want to see guys, risk maybe injuring a guy in a situation like that. Because imagine he did. Imagine he popped LeBron's shoulder out and LeBron was done for the series. I mean, Crowder would just be a villain for the rest of his career, I mean, he really would.
He helped their chances to win a finals, though.
Yeah, I know. Every time Kelly Olynyk checks in, I'm like, get Anthony Davis out, man.
Yeah.
Get him out immediately.
Yeah.
This is dangerous.
Yeah, it's not wrong. Not wrong. I have one more sort of note to add, because I've heard some of the podcasts this morning, read some things. I completely reject this notion of, like, some of the Heat young guys were scared of the NBA Finals game one moment. What the f are we talking about? They've been in this exact same arena because there's a little more paint on the floor. They're suddenly scared. It's got nothing at all, in my opinion, to do with that at all, because this is a weird season and they're in this weird, you know, neutral environment. There's nothing like that. Again, maybe you guys disagree with me. They just got their ass handed to them from the Lakers, who are a damn good team. And then, of course, the injuries that were piling up throughout this game. But, like, I don't think Hero was shook because it was the NBA Finals, because there was a cellist, you know, playing before. Whoa, this is serious here. Like, there was nothing different, is my point.
No, but they didn't get very many open or easy looks. I mean, that's one thing about it that was different, that the Lakers were like...
Yeah, that's the Lakers. That's not to do with game one aura of the Finals. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the thing. It was like, you know, there's some of those shots they might have gotten in earlier rounds, sure, where it's like, they're open. There was none of that. I mean, Tyler Hero, the 1-3 hit was from the side, and he got it off the backboard to go in. Incredible. So, yeah, that's it. I mean, game one, you know, there's no free baskets. There's no easy looks out there. And that's something now that they've gotten that game out of their system, because we know both of these guys have got pretty long, deep range. They can get hot too. The Heat obviously need that now going forward. And maybe it's like, okay, now we understand that if you're going to get a shot off, it's going to come under a lot of pressure, but try to get to your spots and try to get them off if you can.
Mm-hmm. Anything else to add to about this game, guys? Game one of the Finals?
Nice to get a long look at Solomon Hill, man. Solomon Hill. That was just fun seeing Solomon Hill out there. That's all it is. You know, I don't know why he's playing so much right now. I guess he's pretty strong. He looks like he's got some girth to him. It ain't working him guarding Davis, but you're guaranteed to get some text messages when Solomon checks in. People are loving it. It's a full moon tonight.
Yeah. it looks like he wasn't expecting to be playing either in the playoffs. He just sort of has turned up, and they're like, hey, go out and give us 15 minutes, can you?
Well, you joked about Haslam playing, Lee. Yeah. I still wonder... And I was sort of joking when I said it when we were doing our preview, but Myers-Leonard might be dusted off here and, you know, told to take off the military boots and put on sneakers and, you know, put away the shotgunning of the beer for a second, and might play. I mean, just because he's big.
Yeah.
And if you go zone, you know, you can at least stick him in there and maybe he'd attempt some things.
He's just a little bit bigger and more athletic than Kelly Olynyk. So defensively, I think he's better than Olynyk. Olynyk, we know he can hit a three-pointer, but he's not really giving them anything on that end at the moment. And Derek Jones, I mean, he you know, again, he's athletic, but that's about it. Like,
Derek Jones Jr. is fine, I think, again, when they're in the zone.
Well, in the zone, top of the he's zone, okay, yeah.
He's
yeah.
lengthy, he tries hard, but yeah, he's, yeah. when he's skinny. Matched up one-on-one against these guys,
there's not really one of them that really sort of is a convincing argument over the other. It's kind of like you just have to hope one of them has a solid game or some solid minutes out there. But
or Alonzo Mourning down. Come down, bud.
Yeah.
We need you.
Right. Or like Tass and Trey were really saying, Bam's got to basically play like 44 minutes and somehow stay out of foul trouble and, you know, try and neutralize AD as much as possible. Because AD even talked about heading into the series. He was like, I think whoever wins the matchup between me and Bam, you know, helps the chances of that team winning the NBA Finals. I love AD and LeBron, like, really trying to spin the narrative here for their Finals MVP. I'm all for this. Maybe that's the Heat's best chance. Try and just, like, work them up into a lather over their individual awards, right? That they turn on each other within
this game. Divide
and
conquer.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Anything else to add, Tass? Game one? No. Yeah.
No, sir.
Throw it out. And hopefully game two is a little bit closer. And hopefully some of these Heat players, of course, playing it. Let's take a quick break to keep the lights on here. All of you guys had the Heat winning the NBA Finals. And I just saw the updated lines on that. If you want to lay more coin, plus 1,000 now on the Heat to continue on to still win the finals. If you're still feeling confident after that game one there, Lee, ooh, you're thinking about it. You're thinking about it, seeing some money bags in your eyes.
Yeah. Nah. That's the thing. Like, you know, I was talking to a friend last night. I said, I really talked myself into the Heat being able to win this series. You know, the Lakers deserve to be favoritism. I just wanted to see game one to sort of really give you hope that maybe they could pull this off. And
the opposite happened.
Yeah, basically. Yeah,
unfortunately. Yeah. Unfortunately. But hey, look, game two. I mean, what would it matter if they had won game one, the Heat did, and then got blown out in game two? You're still feeling good, right?
Right.
So now they get blown out in game one. If they win game two,
then you're back on track.
You still got a series. You're back on track. I mean, we just really need a competitive close game two.
There were a couple of close-ups on Eric Spoelstra last night, and I was like, oh, man, even he seems to be like, Jesus. Like, and Mike Breen said, this is an avalanche right now. And it just it felt like that. It just felt like the Lakers just got down the other end. and just scored for about 20 possessions in a row.
Yeah.
While the Heat sort of really struggled to even get a decent look. So, yeah. But, hey, crazy things are happening. Remember 2016, the Cavs, I think, lost game two by 30 points, I think it was. I was in Oakland for that game. And I remember on the flight home thinking like, oh, my God, this is embarrassing. Like, they're going to get swept. And what happened? What happened?
Crazy. Crazy.
Crazy stuff. So.
Turns out, though, the Lakers were not afraid of their crazy cousin who's a carny from Sarnia in the end, at least in game one. Let's get to the up-down report.
Prepare your tubies. It's the up-down report.
Yeah, a little up-down report here for you guys. Sticking with the NBA Finals. It's a simple one. We'll throw the photo up. Are you up or down on the 2020 NBA Finals court design? See the blue and the red at each end? You got the huge logo there. What do you think, Trey? Thumbs up or thumbs down on this court design?
It's got to be a thumbs down for me, unfortunately. I don't know why they did end zones. It's such a weird thing to paint just the baselines of this. I do like seeing the Larry O'Brien logo, but we're only kind of getting half of it. And for some reason, they're red and blue. Makes no sense. Why didn't they just go, like, really play up the fact that we're going for basketball's championship here and go gold everywhere? Like, goal, I mean, maybe it's a little bit too Lakers to go gold, but...
Ah, true.
I don't know. I wasn't feeling the end zones, and you said it, Skeets. That logo at half court is a giant.
Oh,
we're
it's
lucky
huge.
That there's no Curry or Lillard in this finals because... That's too easy of a logo shot to make it from there. And, you know, you saw it a ton on Twitter last night. Everybody wants to see the cursive logo come back. Where is it? Somebody unearthed that thing.
Why why did they go away from the beautiful NBA Finals cursive logo? I don't know. This is garbage. I hate the 2020 like that way, you know. We've seen this variation for a couple of years now, so I won't get too angry, but I don't like it. And you're right. I'm glad you said that there, Trey. We better not hear like a Tyler Hero from the logo. Like, so he was a foot back from the three-point line. Wow. I mean, it's so big. But yeah, I'm down as well. Tass, what do you think?
Well, I like that they're taking risks. I don't mind the end zones as much as I mind the center court logo. It's just it's too large. And to have a presenting sponsor presented by YouTube TV at the center court, I don't like it. But at the same time, I kind of like it because I'm hearing all this, oh, nobody watches the NBA anymore, reading all these articles from our colleague Ethan Sherwood-Strauss about, hey, media, basketball sucks, nobody's watching it. Well, the NBA knows the online game, Ethan. So you see that presented by YouTube TV, they know where they're going. I'm not sure how much money that brings in the next CBA, how much that's factored in. Are we changing from linear to online? Are the ad dollars going that way? Listen, I'm not in the negotiations. I don't know, but I do know, Ethan, you see that presenting sponsor. It's clear the NBA knows its online status and how to make that happen. Since the season restart on July 30th, NBA social channels have generated more than 5.3 billion video views. It sounds like a lot. More than 3 million followers have been added across NBA social media accounts since July 1st. Also sounds like a lot. The NBA Finals will reach fans in 215 countries and territories in 48 languages. If you have online service, the NBA is getting to you. So I think that's the key for me, is that the NBA knows its brand, knows where it's going. And even in that pregame conference that Adam Silver had, he kind of does one before every finals. And this one, obviously, a lot different being in the bubble. He said, frankly, people don't watch sports during the summer, and that really has hurt the ratings. That's a big part of it. But he also said, you know, a bunch of other stuff about CBA, and hopefully we can come to negotiations. But they've lost money because, frankly, not as many people are watching, and because obviously there's no fans in the stands. But I just wanted to go on a rant about that. The logo's too big at midcourt. That's all I can say.
What do you think, Lee?
Yeah, Hulu has live sports. That's who I watch it through too, Hulu. So you want to give me a freebie? Fair enough. Why not? It's way too big.
Why not?
It's way too big, the logo. It's just way too big. And it just sort of looks too generic. You know, like you want to see like the Lakers logo and a Heat logo out there because those are the two teams we're seeing. So, you know.
Well, they did put the Lakers virtual logo on.
Right. But I mean, on the court, you talk about that cursive one, the finals thing. Yeah, we want to see that. But you just want to see the two teams. You want to see it on the court all the time for it down there. But what I would do now, I know YouTube pay big bucks, right, to have it on the center court. But they should have just said, listen, there's so much going on. Let's just put it below, like on the outside of the court, because it's still going to be on the center on the TV. Let's just put it there. It's just, we don't need so much going on the
right,
court.
Right. Okay. And what do you think about the end zones?
No, I don't love them either. Red and blue. No. I mean, make one Heat, one Lakers again. Do something like that. Red and blue, and
okay. All right. Well, let's hear from everybody out there. Thumbs up or thumbs down on the 2020 NBA Finals court design that we saw there in Game 1. Next one. LeBron told the media this week that the bubble has been, quote, probably the most challenging thing I've ever done as far as a professional, as far as committing to something and actually making it through, end quote. So I'm going to ask this right away here, Lee. Are you up or down on LeBron calling the bubble the most challenging thing really he's ever done in his NBA career? What do you think?
Oh, I'm definitely up on this. I think this would have been an enormous, not just physical, but mental and emotional challenge to be down in that environment for as long as they've been away, largely away from their family and friends as well for it, and still being able to focus on what they've been able to do. Because, you know, traveling for work is fun if you go for a week or two. You know, you can go away and have some fun, but then you want to go back and you see your family. Right. And in a similar situation, I guess, the Olympics or the World Championships, where they go for maybe 2 or 3 weeks at a time, but there's no sort of restrictions. You can still go out and enjoy the town and the city and things like that. Whereas down here, because of the coronavirus, they've been largely confined to basically the arenas and the hotel rooms, which is just, you know, that would just take an enormous toll on you. So I do think that this is something that the Lakers, and Adam Silver kind of addressed this in his press conference yesterday about the mental health issue as well of being in that situation. And that's why they don't really want to go into a bubble environment again. It's work now, but it's not. It's just not ideal being separated away from your family and your friends for that long. So
right.
I think everyone who's down there has done an incredible job. And, you know, yes, I can't imagine there's a similar situation in life where you go through like that, where you're still expected to perform at the highest level. So credit to LeBron, to everybody who's been down there for this incredible, this amount of time and still, you know, somewhat sane, because it's tough enough for us in this environment as well when we're around our friends and we're confined to our homes. You know, we're around the people we love the most. And even that sort of, you know, is starting to get on people's nerves, because you're just sort of feeling restricted into what you can do. So to be in that situation with not your family must be incredibly tough.
Well said. Well said. Does anybody disagree? I guess, like, I guess you could look at this. I really like all of what you wrote down there, Lee. But could you step back and go, is LeBron sort of, we talked about LeBron in the narrative, is LeBron doing a classic like, hey, this championship right here? Hey, MJ, you didn't have to go to a bubble for 4 to 5 months and come out, you know, victorious on the other end. Again, maybe I'm projecting, but is it at all LeBron doing something here, Trey? Let's go to you. What do you think?
He's laying the groundwork, man, just like he always does. You know, he pulls off an actually impossible feat. The guy beat a 73-9 team after being down 3-1, gets in a cab with Kevin Durant. He says, you know, when I won that championship, I knew I was the GOAT. And people are like, you did? You did? You're saying you're the GOAT? I don't know about that. This to me is a little bit more groundwork laying. Lee broke it down exactly. The mental health portion of this does make it impossible. We've heard Paul George say it. We've heard LeBron say similar things throughout the bubble, how hard it's been for him. But from a basketball standpoint, I will take the Warriors' comeback over beating the Heat. But maybe LeBron will let the Heat get a few games here, right? To make it look a little more impressive.
Well, no. Tass, what do you think? Thumbs up or thumbs down on this one?
Yeah, I'll go thumbs up. The reason why I think it's a thumbs up that it's been the most challenging thing is because LeBron usually goes dark on social media throughout the playoffs, but he's had to keep access to his phone and social media, he said, because he wanted to be in communications with his family. Otherwise, he would go dark. So this just proves that social media is hard on the body. Get off your phone. It's hard on the body. It's hard on the mind. And so that's what's made it tough for him, I think. He was able to go dark and be with his family in every other postseason. In real life, IRL, oh, there's a family around me. That's all I need. But now he's got to be looking and flicking on Instagram and all that. It's not good for the brains. Get off your phones.
It is wild. It probably, like, I don't know, I just put myself in their shoes. When this whole Disney World bubble campus environment is pitched, you're probably like, oh yeah, we could do that. Like, okay, so what, we're going from the hotel to the games and everything's safe and, you know, there's no one coming in from the outside and all that. I just think you, like, automatically go, oh yeah, I could do that for a month or so, whatever. Like, you, it's tough to then think, wow, could I really do it for 4 months or 5 months, whatever the guys, these guys are at. It's just one of those weird things where I think for a little bit, yeah, okay, this isn't that bad, but my God, they've been there a long time, I guess is what I'm getting at here.
Wasn't this the original pitch for the No Season Required Tour, basically? You and
that Tass and I were going to live basically Big Brother style in like a house on a very busy corner in Toronto, glass house at that, and people could just gawk at us like we were hamsters, and we would go in until, yeah, they resolved... you know, the returning to action. Yeah, this was sort of it. Yeah. We would have killed each other. Who would have survived? Tass or I? I mean, one of us would have killed each other and ate the body, I think.
Yeah, we didn't have the ability to go fishing every 5 minutes and also go golfing like the Lakers did a couple days ago. So they are being treated well in there. Let's be clear about that. They're not in a fishbowl. They're by a fishing lake, a fake lake, but...
they're all catching the same fish.
Yeah, I think
we haven't
number...
seen much fishing lately. That's a little disappointing.
That, all that
the fall
stuff
transition,
disappeared. That bubble life stuff.
They're like, oh man, we got to go play basketball now.
Yeah. Apparently, there was a number. I don't have it handy, but I think that there was 540 fishing trips booked in the last 3 months or whatever it is.
Oh, okay.
Great. Now you know people went fishing a lot.
Got a couple more here. Yesterday, NBA Twitter was a buzz with speculation that Raptor center Marc Gasol was headed home to Spain and signing with FSB Barcelona sort of to end his professional basketball career. Now, this may have been contradicted, I guess. It's a little unclear what's going on still. So we don't know if it's official. Marc's going back. Though, you know, a lot of the Raptors beat reporters are saying, this is probably happening, but maybe the news leaked a little early. Who knows? But up or down, I'll ask it like this. Up or down on Marc Gasol potentially finishing his career in Barcelona and leaving the NBA tasks for his twilight years here. What do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah, go do it. Definitely go do it. But I am down on this part of it. So there's the rumor that he's going to FC Barcelona there, the big club that everybody talks about in Spain that everybody plays for. And he played for it, if I'm not mistaken, before he came over. But at the same time, I want to see him finish with the club that he started, a team that was called Girona Marc Gasol for a year before they changed it to Basket Girona. Go shoot 48 times a game. Go be the player coach. Have some fun while you go down here. I think if he does go back and plays for Barcelona, maybe a year, but then go play for your team, which isn't actually far from Barcelona. It's just a little bit north. But yeah, of course, go tend to your garden that you love and go hang out in Barcelona. Have a great time.
Yeah, sounds like a good life, Lee. What do you, I assume your thumbs up.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it'd be great to go and live in Barcelona and play basketball for a living. Yeah, why wouldn't you do it? He's going to the Hall of Fame, I think, Marc Gasol. I think he's done enough to get in there. He's won a championship there with the Raptors. It was great to see him do that. But, yeah, I think the way things ended for him here, it's like, I mean, he would still get a contract in the NBA.
Of course
he would.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, he's kind of done what he needs to do in the NBA now. If he can go back to his home country and play basketball out there and have some fun, why not? Why not go and do that? I'd be more than happy to go and cover him for a couple of years out in Barcelona.
Okay. <Thank you. laughs> All right. Maybe Hulu will pay for that trip for you. What do you think, Trey?
It's a bummer, man. We're going to be losing Mark and Pau in the same year. We're going to have no Gasols, you know. Pau is officially, or at least contemplating retirement. I guess he was signed to the Portland Trailblazers last year. Do people remember Pau Gasol playing on the Milwaukee Bucks last season? Certainly not, but apparently it happened. But, you know, we saw him last night at the Lakers game, sitting there wearing the Kobe jersey. Very nice. But it's going to be weird to have no Gasols. They've been around for a while. They've been great characters to have. They've been, you know, mainstays in the playoffs, guys that we've expected a lot. They were great on our show back in 2015, helping us move the chairs around. But I don't think it'll be the last time we see the Gasols. Just, I guess we probably won't see him on the court again. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to go live in Barcelona and play basketball back in your home country, you're living the life.
Barcelona, it's beautiful.
Where's Adria Gasol, the third brother?
Yeah,
Adria, where are you at? He played
at UCLA.
He
got his own team, CB Adria.
In 2019, Gasol became just the second player to win an NBA title and a FIBA World Gold Medal in the same year. First non-American to do that, of course. And William Liu, he tweeted this out. I 100% agree with it. It's always going to hurt as a Raptors fan, Tass, to lose like any piece of a 2019 championship team. Like, any player that really leaves, they're all, like, because of what this franchise went through, they're all legends, right? I mean, really, forever. And Gasol was instrumental in that title. Offensively, and of course defensively, what he did in a couple of those series against the Sixers, you know, Embiid, and then even against the Bucks. I mean, they don't win the title without Marc Gasol. For sure. So, yeah, if it's true and he's leaving, it just sort of sucks. But I'm with you guys. I love Barcelona. Tass, I know you're a big Madrid guy. We've had that conversation before. But both beautiful cities in Spain. And you can go play ball for a living. You got your family over there. You're living it up.
Yeah, I was tweeting back and forth with John Shue, man, because in 2014, we were both in Spain for the, it was the World Cup of basketball that it was called back then. I mean, I was there, and I ended up going to the World Cup. That was fun. Hung out in both, the Las Ramblas in Barcelona and in Madrid. Madrid was absolutely fantastic. So Schumann broke down the numbers of why Madrid is better than Barcelona. No, I'm kidding. He didn't break it down. He's not that nerdy. But Marc Gasol needs to go home. I'm sure he'll live a little bit of a life like he did at the Raptors championship parade, where he chugged a bottle of wine or two or three or four, and he wasn't allowed on the mic. They didn't give him the mic because he had enough to drink, but he should go and celebrate it. And I think one thing we kind of forget is that he was acquired at the trade deadline that year that they won the championship. Yeah. That's not easy to do, to integrate a starter, and that's how good he is. And he made the defense so good. So, yeah, he's a legend wherever he goes.
I assume Marc Gasol already has a residence in Spain, in Barcelona, wherever, but I would love to see him on Mediterranean Life, where he goes, looks at a couple places, thinks about buying it, which of the three, says, oh, I could see myself having a coffee here. Oh, I could see myself chugging a bottle of rosé here on this patio. God, I would pay so much money to watch Marc Gasol and his family on Mediterranean Life. All right, final one here, make it quick again. It's a photo, up or down, on these Louis Vuitton NBA shoes? I guess that's what these are. Trey, you go first. What, up or down?
This looks like a pair of lugs that they put an NBA tag on. You know, this is a no for me, dog. This is a down. A brown boot. There's no problem with the brown boot, but these are going to be like $9,000 because they're Louis Vuitton. And the only NBA thing you're getting for it, it's a little luggage tag. Are you kidding me? It doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I'm like, Lee, if you guys want to send a pair over, why not? I support all 30 teams.
Yeah. Louis Vuitton, if I remember correctly, they signed or they announced like a multi-year partnership with the NBA at the beginning of 2020. And I only remember that because I think we talked about it. Remember there was like a luxury travel case?
Yeah.
Yes, I think it was going around last night for the Larry O'Brien. That looks pretty cool. And we were like, oh, that's neat. But yeah, these, I'm with you. I think there's that little tag, Trey, and there's another photo where there's an NBA logo on the tongue, cool. Which makes it even worse, I think. Yeah, I'm down. Lee, what do you think of these shoes?
Yeah, they look a little clunky to me. They just look a little heavy and a little clunky. And I mean, look, if Louis wants to send a pair, I'll wear them around.
God.
But otherwise, they look a little bit too much like the Spice Girls, a bit too platformy there at the bottom. they're just too heavy for me. I like something a little lighter on my feet.
If you want to be my Louis. What do you think, Tass?
They're ugly.
Yeah. That's a down.
I don't mind a boot. I don't mind a brown boot, as Trey said, but you can rock some Timbs. Like Kamala Harris does. That's all you need. You don't need to. I'm okay. Again, beige anything, but these just don't do it. The little embezzlement. What do you call those things? There, the little jewelies. No, the jewels and the embellishments. No.
What the hell are you talking?
Those little things in the sole. Get them out of here. They're ugly. Right. Everything's ugly.
Come on, these would look great with a camel coat, man.
I was just gonna say that. Tass rocking his camel coat and those shoes. Hell yeah, that'd be
a yeah, that'd work. That would work. Yeah.
All right, let's take one more quick break.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training, just in time for those warm summer days. Pool season's coming soon, so I've been hitting the weights with Peloton and my guy Adrian Williams, trying to get my muscle on in order to expand my cannonball splash radius. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. It's easy to personalize your workout. Whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance, Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you already excel in. And their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Shout out to Adrian, Aditi, Andy, and Emma. I love you all so much. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. I gotta get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch! We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/NoDunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/NoDunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
Okay, it's time for Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Tweet of the Night. Tweet of the Night is more of a photo, I guess, but there is a caption to go with it. It's from at Brady Klopfer, MBA. He has this photo of Eric Spoelstra sort of looking at the camera while Rachel Nichols sets up the coach's interview between quarters. Caption is, when you lose your keys and someone asks if you've checked where you last put them. That's the look Spoelstra's given right there. Yeah, it was one of those nights for Eric Spoelstra. Not only did he get hammered in game one, but he lost his keys. He doesn't know where he put them, Lee.
Yeah, that's what he looked like on the side a couple of times there last night. Just like, what the hell am I going to do against these guys?
Yep. But, he has been a master of like in-season or I guess in-series adjustments, though.
Yep.
So we will see when he's got up his sort of tight sleeves there for game two. Showing off the guns. He's looking good. Great, great stuff there from at
Brady. Has he got two watches on?
No. Oh, let's go back.
That's
the Disney World thing.
Right.
I like how excited you got that he might have two wristwatches on. All right, let's call it there, guys. That's it for us today. We're actually going to do something we haven't done a lot over the last couple of months. We're going to take a day off tomorrow on Friday. No game on, of course, tonight. But we'll be back on Saturday morning to break down game two of the NBA Finals. So no new podcast on Friday. If you haven't already, go check out the Beach Steppin' podcast that we dropped yesterday. A lot of fun. A lot of zaniness in that one. Keep your questions and your comments coming for the next Beach Steppin' podcast. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com, or tweet them in at nodunksinc. Go grab yourself some sweet No Dunks merchandise at nodunks.com. Shout out to everybody who already copped the Turn Up Love You Guys Awesome t-shirt and or the classic No Dunks pin. Hopefully going to get those shipped out to you guys very, very soon. Thank you, though, if you already did buy one. We really appreciate it. If you haven't already subscribed to The Athletic, tell them we sent you. Go to theathletic.com/NoDunks. Sign up for $1 a month. Crazy deal. Incredible deal. All right. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And the Clippers slander continues here throughout the postseason. So a comment from Sam Unono about those beautiful Louis Vuitton shoes. Those are something Patrick Beverly would wear. Yikes. Ouch.
Brace the day, people.